FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
The Phil Nason Show is on in 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. It's Black Friday, and rather than spend the day in the mall, spend it with us. And we'll talk fantasy football with Jason Walker later on. The Oakland A's signed my favorite whipping boy, Ike Davis, so I'm going to have a lot of fun with that. But up first, we've got hockey. Lots of it. Marty Brodeur is back, maybe? Oh, man, I thought he retired. At least if he has to go somewhere, stay away from the Rangers. That's all I have to say. And joining me to talk about that and a lot more from ArcticIceHockey.com and the Jetstream Podcast, Travis Rubinick is in the house. Travis, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We set up, listen to this, we're going to have some fun now with this show. I set up a voicemail, a Google Mail, Google voicemail, whatever it is. I'm not very computer literate in all these things like you young fellas out there. But if you want to call and leave a voicemail and have that voicemail played for one of the guests to answer a question, you can catch us at 234-738-3394. Leave the mail and make sure to remember, if it's nasty and dirty, I might still play it just to embarrass you. So be nice out there, my listeners. All right, Travis, I want to start with Marty Brodeur. And the reason I want to start with Marty Brodeur is because I want to get it out of the way. What is the story with Marty Brodeur to the Blues, possibly?
The Blues, I honestly don't know what they're thinking here. Brian Elliott went down hurt, and he's a week-to-week situation, I believe. But Marty Brodeur, to say he's past his prime is one of the biggest understatements I think anybody could make. He's been one of the worst goalies in the league for the past 3 to 5 years. He just dragged the Devils down, in my opinion. He got in the way of Corey Schneider. He caused tension there. He needs to learn when to just walk away. And when to walk away was a few years ago. And yeah, I don't know what the Blues are thinking here. They would have had a better shot at picking up almost anybody else. Picking up someone from the AHL and giving them a shot probably would have worked out better. It's a tryout for them right now, so I'm hoping for their sake that they see what Marty Brodeur really is, which to a lot of people is an out of shape, out of touch, overrated old man in net. And that's not to completely say that he's always been bad. I think Marty Brodeur, there's a reason Marty Brodeur has broken so many records. There are a lot of people out there who think a lot of his accolades are a little overhyped because of the teams he played behind. But he is a good goaltender, but he's way past that now. So I don't know what the Blues are thinking here.
Well, I don't know, man. You know, I'm a Rangers fan, so I'm not a big fan of Mr. Brodeur either. But I will say this. He has been a very good goaltender for many, many years. I mean, against the Rangers especially. But he's done some fantastic things in hockey. And we got to give him that kind of credit. I get what you're saying.
I'll give him that. But in the past few years, his numbers have dropped off immensely. The Devils as a whole, the way they play hockey, and I think what a lot of people, especially in Canada, don't understand, Canadians kind of have this outlook on any American team that doesn't sell out every building, their fans don't care. I don't believe that's true. The Devils, when they were a good hockey team, they had great attendance. But the thing with the Devils, and I think why they have trouble sometimes with their attendance, is they play such a boring style of hockey that's so strong defensively that I think has helped Brodeur look as good as he has over the last few years. But his numbers have been worse than Pavlik's, and that's saying a lot. So I don't think this is a good plan for the Blues right now. He's past his prime.
That's fair enough. He has a career goals against average of 2.44, or I'm sorry, 2.24. 91% save percentage lifetime. Gosh, he's made almost 29,000 saves in his career. That's a long time to be playing hockey. I don't know what to tell you. You know what? Good luck to him. You know,
good luck to him.
Sometimes, you know what? I understand what you mean. You know, you're right. He is a little slow, and he did cause some problems there at the end there in New Jersey. But at the end of the day, what would you rather have? I mean, I know it depends on what Brodeur. We don't. Have you seen him yet this year? Have you seen him or any tape?
No, he's
of him?
He's been sitting around waiting for a contract all year. I think personally, I think that's justified. But yeah, he's been sitting around a lot waiting for a contract, hoping somebody gives him something. It's one thing I will say, it's going to be very, very weird if this does work out to see him in any jersey but a Devil's jersey. So it'll be weird, that's for sure.
Yeah, the Devils will be pretty ticked off. Their fan base is pretty passionate. They might give him the blues. But you know what? If any team needs a Marty Brodeur, it's Edmonton. God bless. They've lost 8 straight. What happened to Edmonton, man? And I want to give – next week on this segment, we're going to give away Grant Fuhr's autobiography. We're going to give 5 of them, 5 copies out. If you answer the right question or answer the question we give you. But what in the world is going on with Edmonton? They are just really bad, right?
Yeah, I fell into the trap this year of thinking they might be a better team, which I'm clearly not correct on. I've tried to hold on to what little hope they've had, but the Edmonton Oilers, they've got decent players, but they're in the wrong places for what they need right now. They don't have enough skill. They haven't cared at all about fixing up their defense. I think the big issue with the Oilers right now is their ownership is so – he seems so adamant on hiring his old heroes, the old Oiler guys that he used to watch and hoping that they pull something together, and it hasn't worked. I feel terrible for their coach, Dallas Eakins. He did fantastic things in the AHL. I think he could be a fantastic coach, but he can't seem to make things work in Edmonton. They have some skilled guys. They just don't have nearly enough. They have, I think, 3 or 4 first-round picks for the last 5 – first overall picks in the last 5 years. They have some skilled guys. They just got nothing else for them. They have nothing else to put around them, and it's sad to watch. I don't necessarily feel bad for Oilers fans, being a Leaf fan myself. I understand that your team has been awfully brutal for however long, but you had the 80s. The Leafs haven't done anything since the 60s. So I won't give them that, but they just need a complete change in Edmonton. I think I don't want to say sell stuff off because they don't have much to sell, but they need to find a better defensive group. I'm not convinced, but I think their goaltending, if they had anything to work with, could be okay, or at least average, but they've got nothing there. They need to completely rethink their system and their ideology, and they just need to go back to the drawing board and figure out what the heck they need to do, and it needs to start from the blue line and work its way forward.
What they need to do is suit up Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier again.
Yeah, no kidding.
And maybe Grant Fuhr too. I mean, and then they would have it, because that team's – well, I remember watching them play. I had never seen a center set up behind the net before. And it was amazing. You know, they revolutionized hockey in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And you would think that they had a dynasty happening, but they threw it away for whatever reason. And now they are fighting down there. You know what? We're putting them right next to Columbus. And that's, oh my goodness. And Columbus has an excuse.
Yeah, at least Columbus has a buttload of injuries to go off of. Edmonton is just, I just can't. It's hard to fathom that a team could be so bad for so many years despite so many first overall picks and world junior stars and such big names that just seem to go there and just fall apart. Like, they need – something needs to change there drastically.
Maybe they need to move.
You're going to have a lot of people from Edmonton angry at you if you suggest that. They just dodged that bullet. So
I mean, they have to do something. I think they should move to Seattle. There is a big fan base there too. Maybe they can play in a key arena and do some damage. But No, I'm only kidding. I don't advocate any team moving ever. I hate that. It's not nice. It ruins the sport for a lot of fans. But what they need to do is move out the owner and move out the general manager and move out anyone who scouts for that team because evidently you might be picking great juniors, but they suck when they get to the pros. So that's why you're in the place you're in, Edmonton. And my heart goes out to you, Edmonton Oilers fans. Even though I'm a Rangers fan, I have big love for the Edmonton people. And like I said, next week we'll be giving out 5 copies of Grant Fuhr's autobiography. And it's not for the coffee table or for your mirror. Okay, now, you understood that, didn't you? Yeah, okay. All right, now, the Montreal Canadiens, one Canada team, one team in Canada who is kicking butt, as well as the New York Islanders. I mean, the Islanders haven't been relevant since I was in freaking junior high. I mean, I remember when they had Mike Bossy and Brian Trotche, but they were pretty good then. But they haven't been good since. What in the world is going on here with the Canadiens and the Islanders, Travis?
The Islanders are the easy one for me to see. Unlike the Edmonton Oilers, the Islanders actually went out this offseason and built up their defensive core. The Islanders for a long time have had a decent grouping of forwards. John Tavares, obviously. I've always loved Michael Grabner. He used to play in the AHL when the Manitoba Moose were here in Winnipeg, and he is lightning fast, great hands, a mistake for the Vancouver Canucks to ever let him go. Kyle Okposo, they've just built up such a good group of forwards there. I think getting Mikhail Grabowski and Nick Kuhlman were great moves for them in the offseason. But their main problems in the past have been their defensive unit and their goaltending. They went out this offseason, signed 2 goaltenders that alone, as long as they play how they've played throughout their entire career, would be able to get the Islanders a few more wins, plus an improved defensive group, and you've got a legitimate team in New York. They were another one of those teams that I was looking at as a potential improving, probably pushing for a playoff spot team. I'm not going to go as far as saying I was expecting them to be third in the league or third in the East right now, pushing top 5 in the league, tied with Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh right now. I think they beat Pittsburgh recently, actually. Recently, they've won 5 straight. They've been on fire. But I definitely expected them to be improved. And I think Islander fans should really start embracing this team. I think they've built something and they're putting something together there that has a chance to succeed for a long time. Chad Johnson, who I believe is still their backup there. I'm not certain if he's been playing as much as Yaroslav Halak. But he's a great goaltender for the future once Halak does get a little bit older. Travis Hamonic's an upcoming star in this league, I believe. They've got a lot of good pieces in New York, and it's finally seeming to really come together for them. They're doing it the way that teams wish to do it, but they're adding in pieces where they need to. I love the way the Islanders have been built right now. Garth Snow used to be a laughingstock around the NHL, and he's really quickly kind of become Garth Snow, he's built himself up to be a bit more reputable lately, especially with his moves this offseason. He's done a lot of things that Jets fans were hoping would happen in Winnipeg. They had very similar problems, but the Islanders have beat them to it. The Habs, I'm still confused as to how they're winning games. They just keep doing it. They play a risky style of play. Carey Price has been unbelievable this year. They've had some good play from a lot of young players in Montreal. They keep stacking up defensemen, which has been a problem with them in the past, and they're scoring goals. I want to hate that the Montreal Canadiens are doing well, but they just keep winning games, and it's hard for me to not respect them for it. So I think they've got themselves into a decent spot. It's going to be tough for them to completely fall off. I'm not convinced they're going to stay in top of the East right now, definitely not in top of the league. But they're looking pretty, they're sitting pretty for moving forward right now. Again, I see vulnerabilities there. They do give up a lot of chances. They do get outshot a fair amount, but they're winning. So that's all that really does matter when it comes down to it.
Well, I hate the Islanders, so I don't even want to talk about them, but, you know what? This is a good hockey team in Montreal. They're playing gritty hockey. They're winning these games by the skin of their teeth. At some point, it's going to change. The tide's going to turn, and that's the scary part. Which way it turns is up to Montreal. They got to put the puck in the net, though. Their goal differential is like, what, +4? But they still win, and it's amazing. You know, another team that's winning too and winning some ugly games is Nashville. Pecorine, if it's up to me, today I give him the Vezina trophy and just tell him God bless you because he's having a good year. We've got about a minute and a half left, Travis. What's happening in Nashville that we should be concerned about?
Nashville, they're an interesting case. Peter Laviolette plays a style of hockey that – or he coaches a style of hockey that has – teams being that they allow teams to go on these great runs, but once people seem to figure them out, they hamper a little bit, or at least that's what used to happen to them in the past. The difference here now and what he used to have in Philadelphia is, like you said, Pecorine. He's a great, great goaltender when he's on his game. He had a bunch of injury problems last year. Philip Forsberg is shown to be a fantastic rookie for Nashville, and the fact that the Washington Capitals traded him away is ridiculous. But yeah, the Preds are, they're looking legit. They're playing good hockey for the most part. When they do go on a bit of a slide, I'd be interested to see if they can pull themselves out of it, but it's rare events that you see the Nashville Predators putting up a lot of goals, and they have been this year. So if they keep that up, then I see them actually contending for a decent playoff spot, but that's really going to throw things for a loop in the Central. That means a pretty good team is probably not going to make the playoffs. And the question is going to come down to who that team is.
That's good stuff. You're right, too. I agree with you completely. Travis, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Yep, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Travis Rubinick. And if you want to contact us and ask us your hockey questions, we'll try to answer them on the air. You can call us at 234-738-3394. You can also find Travis over at ArcticIceHockey.com and the Jetstream Podcast. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at blazersedge.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason's Show.
Daughter, what a one,
she tells me lies.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Please remember that we have a voicemail now for your opportunities to have your questions answered on the air. The number is 234-738-3394. On the line with me right now, it's fantasy football time. You know who that means or what that means. Jason Walker's in the house. Jason, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, Phil. Loving it. Great Thanksgiving. Hope you did well. And man, great DFS action going on out there right now.
Great DFS. Great daily fantasy sports. And by the way, you can find Jason over at rotoadvice.com. I didn't have any coffee today. Nothing's open today, it seems, anywhere near me. And it is really starting to upset me, these people. They cry about the fact that they don't have any money, they don't have any business, and then they're never open. I mean, what's the story with these people? And it's Black Friday, of all things.
I know. You think you could get a cup of Joe out there.
Can't get anything. I got a bottle of Werner's, though, so I guess that's close enough. But anyhow, so if I have some faux pas today, it's all good in the hood. Anyhow, KG3. I had more questions about that dude than anyone else. Now, he is not starting, at least, for the Redskins. What's the story? What do you do with him on the fantasy level? You just dump him, right?
I liked him as a speculative pickup about a month ago. And, you know, he came back, got the job. Didn't look right. He just didn't look right. If he can't run, he doesn't have the value. You know, I thought coming into the year he would have some good value with DeSean Jackson coming in. But at this point, you know, he's lost a job to Colt McCoy. You're near the end of the season. If you were in a start one quarterback league, you shouldn't have had him on your roster anyway, unless it was a deep bench. But start two quarterback leagues, I could see that. I certainly participated in a few of those. It made a lot of sense. But now, not having the job, it's so close to the end of the season, and he didn't even look right once he came back. If you've got him on your roster, you should just let him go, pick up some speculative upside plays, some handcuffs to, you know, maybe you could pick up your James Starks to Eddie Lacy type thing. You know, protect yourself. You don't need RG3 on your roster moving forward.
Nope, you sure don't. I think R2-D2's finished in the NFL.
He's got to get healthy. I mean, he's got to be able to run. And if he can't run, he just doesn't have the value because he can't keep people at home. And even his quarterbacking was worse than it was his first year. You know, guys are coming open and he's just not being able to pull the trigger. It just comes from not being on the field a whole lot. The game's a little quicker when that happens. He's just got to get right, got to get have a full season of prep. And, you know, he's got to be in the mix and be able to slow the game down a little bit more so his passing's right. Because if he's not running the ball for 60 to 80 yards, then he's got to throw it. And he's got the weapons, but it's not happening for him right now.
Sure isn't. But you know what? Help is on the way. Mark Sanchez had another nice game. You see, you folks get on me about Mark Sanchez. I told you all along, I'm a Jets fan. And I was really disappointed in how it ended for him in New York. I would take him. He's 46% owned. I'd take him over R2-D2 any day because I don't like R2-D2 that much. I was never high on him when he came out. I was really surprised that he did as well as he did. And then the reason is not because he's not talented. It's because he's reckless on the football field and he's not very big. And those two things don't usually bode well in the NFL, especially for a quarterback. Guys want to just tear apart. So, yes, Jason is right. Dump Robert Griffin III from your lineup. Daily Fantasy. Fantasy football over at FanDuel this Sunday. Now, I have a column out there at Max Sports Channels, but it's a little different than what we're going to do today because I don't know how I did this, but I ended up with the Lions defense, and I ended up with Cody Parkey again as my kicker on the blog.
Yeah.
But I don't remember which one I did it in now. Because I've got like seven or eight of them here. But then I have a different one for you all today. My quarterback today, Jason?
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill.
Wow.
Great. 8,600.
Great tournament play. Because at his price, like you said, 8,600 there on FanDuel, he's in that kind of top tier. And if you're going to spend money in the top tier, a lot of people are going to be looking at that Rodgers-Brady matchup. They're certainly going to be looking at Andrew Luck at $10,100 on FanDuel going against that awful Washington secondary. But Tannehill makes a nice contrarian tourney play, Phil. You're on it. And against that, you know, say a below average
team,
below average Jets secondary for sure. So
yeah,
that's a great tournament play there on FanDuel.
Who do you have?
I've got my cash games. I'm rolling with Luck against Washington. I think that floor is nice and high for someone like Luck. But in tournament action, I'm actually going with Peyton Manning. Because at 10 grand, I think he's even going to be less rostered than even Ryan Tannehill. Because you get at least a haircut on price with Tannehill, which is nice. But Manning is a full $10,000, and he's probably not going to be very well owned out there at Kansas City. But, you know, Kansas City's got a tough defense, but Manning was still able to put up four touchdowns against a similar Miami Dolphins defense last week. So I like luck when I'm playing 50-50s or head-to-head because you know where his floor is going to be against Washington. But tournament action, I'm going with Peyton.
Those are good picks. I really like those picks. Now, my running back is, of course, Eddie Lacy because we go to the well forever. And by the way, last week my team won, folks. And I'm sure you probably saw that. I bragged about it everywhere. But I'm going with Eddie Lacy, $8,800. Mm-hmm. He's going to run roughshod over the New England Patriots.
Yeah, it's he's a good play because he's below the Le'Veon Bell line, which is one of the top tier guys. Jamal Charles is another nice play in tournament action because he's more expensive than Bell, and a lot of people are going to be on Bell. So I think that those are good picks. I like Rashad Jennings at 7,100 on FanDuel, getting a lot of touches after being coming back from injury, going at Jacksonville. They'll probably try to run the ball a little bit. Jacksonville's run defense not good, third worst run defense in the league. So Rashad Jennings could be a guy that people aren't very sure of. He may not be highly rostered, but you get a nice discount there at 7,100 on FanDuel. If you want to go deep discount, Rec, you know, Dan Heron, Boom Heron, we had him out there as a home run pick last week on Roto Advice. And he started for $4,500 last week, which is the minimum on FanDuel. And he came across, ran better than Trent Richardson. He's more expensive this week. He's 5,800, but that's still a very good value if you're looking for to someone to slot in lower on FanDuel going against that Washington defense. So he's Boom Heron's a guy to take a look at in the discount rack as well. But spending up high, tournament play, I like Arian Foster if he's healthy and he plays against Tennessee because 8,700 is pretty pricey for a guy with that much risk, but the upside's huge against Tennessee. And Arian Foster was running the ball really, really well. So if he's healthy and he's a go, Arian Foster's an interesting tournament play on FanDuel.
Yes, he is. Those are great picks, by the way. Now, my other running back is Terrence West from the Browns. He'll get the touches this week because Crowell got him last week because that's how Shanahan does things over there. So,
yeah.
Terrence West is at 5,400. I really like him. Mm-hmm. And Jason's already given us several running backs. Wide receivers. All right, I'll just go all three of them.
Yeah.
Josh Gordon, 8,100. This is the last week I'll be able to afford him probably.
Yes.
Jarvis Landry, I'm going to take him because I got Tannehill and I want a combo out of it. And I think he's probably the more likely of the two in case somebody gets hurt. I think somebody is hurt in Miami, actually. And then I have Decker as my third. He this is my team, man. I'm really happy with my receiving core.
Yeah, you know, Mike Wallace is questionable. I think he'll play. But Charles Clay, certainly his hamstring, he's questionable. And so there's a couple passing targets there that aren't at least 100%. So Jarvis Landry is getting a lot of targets, nice possession receiver, one of the hot pickups, too, in seasonal leagues. Getting in the end zone, too. Tannehill looking for him in the red zone. And you got to love those guys who get a lot of targets, a lot of volume on an offense that can move the ball, which is what Tannehill does and what Tannehill's going to do against the Jets. So Landry is a nice pick. On the top end, my cash game pick is Antonio Brown. You just can't go wrong. The Saints are terrible defensively. The Steelers are at home. I've got Roethlisberger as a safe mid-tier play on the quarterback side. So Antonio Brown, I mean, there's no more Mr. Solid than him this year. So in cash games, I like that. But A.J. Green for $200 less going against Tampa. That Dalton to Green, you're talking about stacking Tannehill and Landry. I like that in tournament action. I love stacking in that case. Gives you a lot of upside. Dalton to Green could be a good one, too. with Cincinnati. A.J. Green is back, and the Bengals are a different offense with him on the field. And certainly Dalton's a better quarterback with Green on the field. He's $9,000 on FanDuel. But looking a little bit lower, a little cheaper, everybody is going into the discount rack, Phil, to grab Kenny Stills of New Orleans because they're going to be behind, and Brees is going to have to pass. And at $5,100 on FanDuel, Kenny Stills is going to be highly owned out there, and for good reason. He got a ton of targets last week, 9 targets. It's the first week without Brandon Cooks, and Kenny Stills is the guy that stepped up and made it happen out there in New Orleans. So in Pittsburgh, they're going to be behind. Stills is a good pick. In my mid-tier, I like Reggie Wayne. I don't know. He's jumping out at me, Phil. He's not an explosive guy anymore, but in terms of a cash game play, you're looking for that high floor. 65 targets in the last 6 weeks for Reg Wayne out there going at home against Washington. A solid guy if you're looking for somebody to kind of mix and match as you're going, trying to fit Josh Gordon in there or a couple of the other picks that you had out there. Take a look at that as a safe play, Reggie Wayne.
All great stuff. All of it's great stuff. You've come up with a lot of names. I like Kenny Stills. I almost went with him, but I decided to go with Decker instead, and I'm happy about that. I still have $500 on my salary cap I could play with if I wanted to. But now, because we have to move this along, my tight end is going to be Travis Kelce again,
yep.
$5,300. My kicker is Cundiff from the Browns, Billy Cundiff. And I'm taking the Colts defense today, this week.
Yeah, you got a couple of my picks on there. You know, if you're looking for a cheaper option in the tight end game, Kelce, it's $5,300 on FanDuel. It's a nice slide in there. I'm a big believer in paying for Graham or Gronkowski. I would certainly pay for Graham this week, $7,500 on FanDuel. But if you're trying to get in on some of the higher guys like Antonio Brown, A.J. Green, some of the guys we mentioned, then you got to look at tight end, and Kelce is a great pick. At home against Denver. Kicker-wise, you know, I'm a big Mason Crosby guy, and I think that that New England-Green Bay game is going to be very high-scoring. I like him in that one, and I also like Sean Swisham, who's going to be in what I think is a sneaky high-score game in Pittsburgh this week against New Orleans. Those are a couple options there, and I do like the Colts. I mean, they're a little pricier. They're they come at $5,500, the top-priced defense on FanDuel, but they're good against Washington. And, you know, we already talked about if you want to go a little cheaper, $4,900 for the Miami defense against Geno Smith and the Jets. You can certainly take a shot at them as well. And the Giants against Jacksonville, $4,900. There's a couple of lower priced options, but I do. I'm with you, Phil. I like the Colts at $5,500. And they got Josh Cribbs, too. Josh Cribbs, sneaky kick return play. Could get you a quick six without even trying.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that you have to look at when you're playing these games is the special teams, the intangibles that get you the points that you need. Boy, you know what? I liked this week. I don't know. Like I said, I played in this one game where it started on Thursday. Yeah. And I had Cody Parkey, who had a nice game. And the Lions played pretty well. But that's what you have to do when you're playing these daily things. You have to take chances sometimes, especially when these draws are like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people playing in them.
Right.
You have to take the chances. And the other thing that I don't worry about is the salary cap. I pick my players.
Right.
And if I am $500 down, I don't care. If I'm $1,000 over or something, that's a different issue. But for like 500 or less, I don't care about that.
Yeah, it's all about putting together a roster you think is going to score a lot of points. And if you're in one of those big tournaments, you have to go a little bit against the grain in places. And you certainly have that going with your Tannehill, Landry stack. You know, I've got a Dalton, A.J. Green stack. I mean, you kind of want to go against the grain, guys that aren't necessarily going to be paid for in those tournaments, but can still have high upside games. And if you put together a roster that you think's going to bring it home and your point total looks good, doesn't matter what that cap says.
Nope, it sure doesn't. There's no doubt about that. And you know what? My team is either going to be first or worst. And that's kind of the way it is sometimes with this sort of thing. But anyway, I'll tell you what, this has been great stuff today, Jason. Thank you so much for being on the show. And we will see you next week. We're going to do a fantasy basketball and a football next week.
Oh, it's going to be all good. Love it. DFS all the way. Good luck out there on FanDuel.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Good luck on FanDuel. And that was Jason Walker. You can find him at rotoadvice.com. Coming up next, Alex Hall will be here to talk Oakland A's baseball. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at BlazersEdge.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, we're all Forget, and you're listening to Phil Nason's Show.
Father John, I'm in love with your daughter. Oh, the one with the champagne eyes. She knows that I love her. She tells me lies. Oh, yeah. That's what you do.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of NHL hockey, fantasy football, and now joining me to talk about Ike Davis, a name I thought I'd never bring up again on the show. Please welcome from athleticsnation.com. Alex Hall is in the house. Alex, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I like Ike. Do you like Ike, Phil?
I can't stand Ike Davis. As a human being, I guess he's all right. I don't know. I never met him. But as a baseball player, no, never did. In fact, I remember on this show in 2012, Alex, I said they ought to trade Ike Davis high because he's never going to do what he's doing at the time he was doing it. And Mets fans everywhere killed me, kicked me out of the club. And I've been in the club longer than them, most of them.
I didn't think you could get kicked out of the Mets club.
Apparently, I was the first one. And it's okay because it is what it is. But, he's awful. I can't believe Billy Bean traded for him. Why? Well, give us the story on this.
Well, we're still figuring out the story ourselves. Now, when I look at him I don't see quite as awful of a player as you do, but then again, I've also never had to watch him play before, so I can't say for sure. But what I see with Ike Davis is just one more piece of the kind of puzzle the A's usually make. Remember, first base has not been a particularly good position for the A's lately. If you look at how their first baseman did last year, they ranked 26th in baseball in OPS, all of their first basemen combined. And that included a lot of, well, not a lot, but a fair amount of Alberto Chiaspo playing first, a lot of Derek Barton playing first. Nate Freiman was only all right. A lot of Stephen Vogt playing out of position at first base. So it was a bit of a mix and match, and it didn't go all that well. But now they've brought in Billy Butler. They still got Brandon Moss there to play first. Vogt can still back up. And you've got Ike Davis in here too. You don't know exactly where he might fit on the roster yet, but you can kind of start to see what, maybe why they would want him to have an actual guy who's played there before and maybe who could hit a little bit in the right situation. And as for what that right situation is, it's pretty clearly against right-handed pitching. This could be another guy that the A's want to maybe platoon if he's on the team. His overall hitting lines for his career aren't all that great, but when you take him just against right-handed pitching, as he's a left-handed batter, you get an 813 OPS for his entire career. That's something that we can live with. So, you know, you can't platoon too many spots on the diamond, but you can definitely do a few, and that's how you can turn a guy like Davis maybe closer into the player he was before than a little bit of the decline he's had now, because he's had a very interesting career with a 32 home run year in 2012. He had some medical issues at some point after that. He's one of the guys that's had this valley fever. Remember, Connor Jackson had the same thing with the A's, and one or two other guys I've heard of, and it has bothered guys in the past. However, I think he had that before he hit the 32 homers, so I don't know how to explain that. But anyway, he had that one huge year. He hasn't really ever repeated it since, but everyone's always kind of chasing that rabbit, seeing if maybe he can do it again. So the A's will be the next team to try him out with that. And the only real question at this point, two questions are, A, you know, is he really in the mix to make the team, or is he kind of on the outside having to force his way in? And the other thing is, does this maybe signal a larger trade with a bit of a logjam with guys like Davis joining John Jaso and Brandon Moss and you know, hopefully not, but maybe even Josh Reddick in this kind of first base DH outfield mix? Does maybe one of them get traded in another deal for a pitcher or a shortstop or something like that? So it raises a lot of questions. And all we can do is, you know, think about them until we start to see answers later in the winter. And then in spring training, as the roster starts to take shape.
Man, he's awful, dude. You know, he had that valley fever, and he hit 32 bombs in the second half of the season. You know, he had one of those weird careers with the Mets, Alex. He had a good rookie year, a really good one. He almost won Rookie of the Year. And then he hurt his foot. And then they didn't know what to do with him, so they left him to do nothing, and they just never saw him again. And then he came back in 2012, and he played a lot of games. I think he played like 150 or more. He just couldn't get it together. And then everything went south, really, quickly, by the way. He played in 100 games, I think, in 2013, but he also spent time in the minor leagues. In 2014, he spent a little time in the minor leagues. He played like 12 games with the Mets, and he played 131 games. They finally traded him. And this is the kind of thing that you watch. One of the things that always stood out about him, though, was his defense. He plays really good defense, or he did during parts of his career with the Mets. When everything was going right, everything was really going right. But when the minute things started going south, everything went to crap with him. He started swinging at really bad pitches. I mean, he would strike out on pitches that, he looked like he was playing for the Bad News Bears. I don't even know if he was good enough to play for the Bad News Bears. And now he's with the – and then when he went to Pittsburgh, that was a good trade for the Mets because they got a bag of baseballs for him and I think a – couple of old donuts because they didn't get much else for Ike. And he didn't do that hot really for them either. He ended up with a minus 0.4 wins above replacement. That's awful. He is not going to make the team in Oakland. They're too good.
Well, here's why he could. Your first number is 684 and your second number is 722. The 684 is the OPS that all of Oakland's first basemen put up combined last year, and the 722 is what Ike did. Even hitting 230, you know, and not having the best year in the world, he still significantly outplayed or at least outhit Oakland first baseman. And then you also consider that he can at least play a little bit of defense. Maybe it wasn't quite there last year. I don't know if that's a permanent drop in ability or if he just had, you know, a little bit of a bad year with the glove. But those, when you start to consider those two things, he's hitting better than the average first baseman on the team, and he's the only one who's actually a natural first baseman and been playing that position his whole life. You start to kind of see why even a guy of his flaws might improve the team, or might not. But you can see room for that improvement there, even with him playing as mediocre as he has been.
That's fair enough. You know what? He's something else, though. He can pitch too, by the way.
Oh yeah,
I think he pitched once for the Mets too. He pitched in college, I think, at Arizona State. He is a fan favorite, or he was, even when he was crap. I mean, the fans used to kill me because I used to talk about him in a negative way every week. And it seems to me they picked this guy up as a way or a means of soothing the Hanley Ramirez let, that they didn't get him back. Right?
I don't know about that. I don't think that would be related at all, since we weren't really ever in any kind of running, you know, for him. I mean, the A's have been mentioned in some other free agents, like Tomas, who finally went to the Diamondbacks. I mean, the A's actually got mentioned in, you know, scouting him and maybe taking a look at him. And they've been mentioned with some other shortstops like Cabrera. But there was never any actual mention of Hanley. We had a good discussion about Hanley on the website, but that was a little more of an academic, would he have made sense here, than really a, oh my goodness, we made a run and missed out. I don't think there was ever any question that he was coming here. So you don't really need to make up for that. It's not really a loss to make up for. And it also, you got to kind of wonder, was he going to Boston all along? Because that happened very quickly and easily, a little cheaper than you maybe were expecting. And you never really heard anything about any kind of public bidding where, you know, with Sandoval out there, you were hearing about the Giants making bids on him. I think there's a third team in there, maybe the Padres or something making bids. But with Hanley, I don't remember hearing about any other team ever offering him a contract or even coming close to doing so. And so you kind of think he was going there all along. As for him not coming to the A's, you know, the conclusion that a lot of us came to on the site was that while, of course, he would look very good in the middle of the lineup, he just wouldn't have been a very smart investment for the team, because although a big right-handed bat is exactly what the lineup needs, he's got a lot of drawbacks, and the A's got to be careful who they spend $22 million a year on. There do exist players who you could make those exceptions and put that big chunk of the payroll, maybe a long-term contract. But you're talking about a guy who, look, aside from that hitting, he's not going to be playing shortstop very much longer. Actually, well, now he's in Boston, he probably won't be playing there at all anymore. But if he had been somewhere like Oakland, you know, he didn't have too much shortstop left in him. He's also a very big injury risk. He's missed a lot of games over the last 4 years, and that was in his late 20s. As he gets into his 30s here, that's not going to get any better. And yeah, you know, maybe now he rips off a few full seasons, maybe going to an easier defensive position or a designated hitter could mitigate that. But as the A's, you want to put $22 million into a guy, you need a better assurance that he's going to play, and that if he doesn't play, it's unexpected, and it's not, oh, well, of course he misses this many games every year. So I'm not too disappointed that the A's didn't go for him. I mean, of course, the big right hand bat, the 132 OPS plus for his career, that would look great in Oakland's lineup. But pass on that one. There will be other opportunities to get good players. And I just don't think he was the right one for this team at this time.
That makes sense. I'm just trying to figure out why they would sign Ike Davis, because I wouldn't do it. You know, I'm just trying to look for anything. But, you know, the other thing, too, about Davis, back to Davis, since really no one really talked about him much over at Athletics Nation, is that the earliest he can become a free agent is 2017. He's under team control. He's a second-year arbitration eligible this season or after last season. So you know what? Or he's arbitration eligible. He'll get a little less than $3.5 million because he didn't earn it. And life will be good, I guess. You know what? It'll be weird to see Ike Davis in an Oakland A's uniform because now I got to cover him to there too.
Yeah, but won't it be even weirder if he starts playing well and you have to like him again?
No, I'll never like him. I didn't like him all that much when he was doing well with the Mets. There's something about the way I don't know what it is. You ever have that happen where you see a player and you go, I just can't get into this.
You know who that used to be for me?
Who?
It was Bartolo Colon.
Oh, big Bart, eh?
I couldn't stand the guy until he came to Oakland, and then I fell in love with him.
Yeah,
then you got to see him go out there every day and stand there on the mound and throw the ball up in the air and catch it because he was just so bored from getting so many hitters out that he wanted to do something different for a minute.
Yeah, I love Bart. I watched Bart play for the Indians a long time ago when he was a rookie. I mean, I was at Jacobs Field with my friend Melvin here in Akron, actually, and watching him pitch, he was fantastic. I've always been a Bartolo Colon fan. Are you a Bartolo Colon fan now?
Oh, undyingly, yes. His couple of years here sold me on him. I didn't understand how cool he was until he got here. I don't know, you know, I don't know what it was about him before. He was on the great Indians teams, and then he made his big comeback for the Yankees. He was on the Angels. He won a Cy Young on the Angels. How am I supposed to like that guy, you know? But as soon as he got here, I just absolutely loved him. And then now he's on your Mets, and his big stories last year were all of his batting appearances. Which were a lot of fun to watch.
They were a lot of fun to watch. You know, I try to remind Mets fans, you know, that I work with you too. And I know a little bit more about Bartolo Colon than they do. And I said, this is the best signing you'll have all year because he's going to be entertaining. And he was. I just didn't think it would be with the bat in his hands. But, man, watching him run bases, Big Bart, I love Big Bart. Always have. You know, A's fans, I think, as a whole, basically like him too, right?
Sure, you know, it's good to have a couple of fan favorites like that around, and I think that's kind of one reason that Billy Beane has so adamantly kept Coco Crisp around. It's not something he normally does to sign a player for any kind of off-field issue like that. You know, usually it's just the cold, unemotional on the field. But, you know, Coco got that extension. He's still around for a couple of more years, and I don't think there's really any question that Beane just kind of likes him a little more than he likes the other players, or something about him, something about the fan favorite. He might have finally recognized, hey, the fans need someone that they can root for year after year and have a constant presence. Yeah, fun to have a couple of fan favorites on there.
Sure is. Great stuff today, Alex. A lot of fun today. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
Hey, that was Alex Hall. You can find him at athleticsnation.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's Black Friday show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves, be good, and most importantly...
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.